Ladies and gentlemen, we are back on the FlightSick.com Tee Talk podcast, brought to you this week by TaylorMade and TP5 and TP5X Golf Balls. Stefan Tiedorf here, sitting with my co-host in our virtual Zoom studio. Zoom, just another free ad from Tee Talk. Scott McLeod, how are you today?
I'm doing good. Enough Zoom calls, that's for sure. I think everybody's probably sick of them by now, or just, I don't know. I've had enough of them. How's that? I'd rather get in the studio at some point, and we'll do this in person sometime.
God, I was born in Zoom. You just merely adapted to it.
Okay.
Quoting Bane here, because this is my life. Every day I did this for 5 years, and the rest of you guys are acting like it's hard work.
We all jumped into your party, I guess.
Yeah, get out of my party here.
All right.
You do something else. Well, we have golf back this weekend. Again, the match two happened with Phil Mickelson and Tom Brady taking on Tiger Woods and my boy Peyton Manning. What a great event. I love this. I almost swore there. That's how much I love this.
I think you're not alone.
Yeah, no, it was... No one could say this was great golf by any means, but this was highly, highly entertaining. What were your thoughts?
Yeah, I think I said that in a tweet. I mean, if you dialed in to watch it on whatever channel you could find it on,
Weather Network.
We joked about the Weather Network, and believe me, I got enough tweets on Sunday of people going, "What channel? Where do I find this?" You know, and I saw all sorts of people, dialing up their cable companies to try and get whatever channel, HLN or CNN International, just so they could get it. But you know what? If you tuned in to watch spectacular golf, wrong move. Except for Tiger, as you mentioned, but otherwise, entertainment, banter, all the things that you wanted this to be, it pretty much was, short of, a monsoon that they had to play in, which looked for a while like it was going to delay them. They only ended up being delayed 45 minutes. Didn't know if they're going to get it in. They got it in just under the nick of time as far as darkness is concerned. But you know what? I was entertained. I watched it from start to finish, and I thought it was going to be something maybe partway through I'd want to turn off, but no way, right to the end, except for Charles Barkley playing the 18th. I saw him top his tee shot, and that was enough for me, so I turned it off after that.
I know about top and tee shots. I don't know what's wrong with me, but I'm either the best golfer in the world or absolutely awful, no in between. We don't need to get into my game, but let's just say I have in five rounds, a 17 shot difference between my low and my high. Wow. So things are weird, but let's go back. So we talked about how entertaining it was. I think even the no laying up guys, and these guys just destroy golf when it's on TV. And yes, sure, we're plugging another podcast, but they're good guys, so we'll allow it. They would agree that this was very well done. Couple things that I noted. Justin Thomas, if this guy, awesome, if his career is over from golf standpoint ever, he's got a career in media. Unbelievable. Love the chirps. It was just great stuff. And then Tiger kind of popped out to me. He's just become a guy. Like, he's become almost normal, it felt like.
Yeah, I mean, he's he was always reserved so much during his career. He felt isolated. This is probably the Tiger that we just didn't see, away from the spotlight when he was trying to be guarded. And I think, he's come into his own. He realizes he can just be that guy. The chirps, the swings, and he plays great. I'm sure if he played terrible, he probably wouldn't be in a very good mood. But I guess, he was striping it. I don't know if he missed a fairway.
I don't even know if he saw his ball hit a fairway. He was in his cart by the time it even got down most of the time. Yeah. He's just that dialed in, which, has got to make golf fans just giddy going forward. And we'll kind of get into our thoughts about Tiger Woods later and if we actually expect him to play much during this. But it was great. Now, Tom obviously had a rough start.
That's a good way to describe it.
Split his pants, which was pretty funny. Now, I'm gonna say this, though. Everyone's like, oh, Tom Brady, vanity handicap, vanity handicap. I don't agree with that. Put yourself in this scenario, right? Like, A, right now my handicap on Golf Canada says 4.2. Okay. I shot 91 on Sunday. I couldn't hit the ball anywhere. We all have bad days. Now, imagine if I had a bad day and then we threw that every single one of my shots was on camera And then on top of that, it's being shown to millions of people around the world.
Yeah,
and
only 5.8 million watched on average with a peak of 6.3 million. So that's not, you know, that's not intimidating at all.
Let's just throw that in for myself. And I don't have the legacy of being one of the best athletes of all time in my sport and that pressure. So I'm giving Tom a pass. He probably is an 8.1. Who really cares? And I think people are just getting on him because
he still had the shot of the, he actually had two. He had that hole out from the fairway, and obviously he made that putt for an eagle. So, you know, I think maybe he was sandbagging us a little on the front, but he just needed to get comfortable. I mean, he just, you know how it is. You get out of rhythm and away you go. I was chirping him a little bit on Twitter just because it was fun more than anything. It wasn't certainly, wasn't meaning any harm or anything by it, but great athlete. He knows this is not his job. I mean, this is not what he does. So, you know, he's still an active football player, and that's what he's been focused on. He said it during the competition.
Of course he did. If he was going well, you'd think he would have brought up the fact that he's, you know, exercising football. I got a hot take for you though.
All right.
Let me know what you think about this. Phil Mickelson is the worst dressed golfer of all time. And like, I'm going to give you a couple examples. On Sunday, he wore blue on blue on blue with a slightly not blue shoes and a belt that really didn't match. Okay. It just like, you look silly. Let's go back a year or two ago when he was rocking those, he was trying to make dress shirts work on the PGA Tour, which just wasn't good. You know, we go back to those Masters broadcasts and, you know, he looked out of place then.
At least he had a haircut.
That's fair. He loves those snakeskin belts. I mean, no one loves a snakeskin belt more than a golfer, but Phil, it might be a hot take.
They're kind of dated. They're kind of dated by now.
They were dated 10 years ago. It might be a hot take, might not, but that's just my thought. That was like, I can't not look at Phil and just look at whatever he's wearing and think that like his wife needs to start dressing this man.
The other side too is that, you know, if you're going to wear shorts, I'm not sure if you can go with a classic style shoe as easily. I think even if they're, you know, G4 or something like that, I think you still have to have something a little bit more athletic.
That's fair. And I guess I'm chirping Phil. And the worst part is Phil's outfit wasn't even the worst out there.
Well, at least his pants stayed together. Right?
Well, that. But Tiger, like, you know, those shorts when, you know what, they were, I mean, they were capris.
culottes.
They're capris. And he's got this, you know, mock neck. Like, Tiger, you're 40, you're 45 almost. Come on. You know, it's just, I guess at the end of the day, these guys are in their 40s. Maybe they're just not going to be fashionistas out there. But
wear whatever you want. I guess. It doesn't really matter.
I guess. But just that was my hot take. And overall, I loved it. You know, you could tell when they had to bleep stuff out as well. Yeah. So the sound goes and you wonder what those chirps were.
And there was a lot of that. I mean, here's the other side of it. You know, this is a Warner Media broadcast, you know, with TNT and obviously HLN, CNN and whatever. I would have loved to have seen a broadcast of this with no bleeping on HBO. They own HBO.
Yeah, why not? Why
wouldn't
you do it?
They'll do it later on. Who knows? But I think a lot of people would pay to hear what every single one of those chirps actually was.
Well, I paid for the last match and it had nothing.
True.
So maybe I deserve a freebie on the next
maybe
one. Either way, I think we could go on forever. Everyone watched it. You saw all the takes about it on Twitter and whatnot. I thoroughly enjoyed it. I'm down for another one. I think it works with other players if you get the right guys in there. But you need a little flair in there a bit. And I think they tried their best, but let's try to get some guys that get heated. Give me like a player like that's, you know, in the NHL, for example, that just had like a quick trigger. Like, give me a Ty Domi out there that was just going to snap at any point. That would be
I drove a golf ball once into Ty Domi. I don't recommend it. So yeah, he probably would be good for this situation for sure. And like, I mean, that said, you know, that's one player. Who else would you like to see that would realistically make it work? Because obviously Ty Domi is not going to draw 5.6 million people. So, you know, who would you like to see if they were going to have a match three?
I mean, Charles Barkley would be funny just from how bad he'd be. Like, if you get two, what if you do it?
Do you want to play alternate shot with Charles Barkley?
But that would be entertaining. I thought the alternate shot was way better than the front nine. It brought actual, you know, skill,
drama
like,
to yeah, it. Drama, well, I think we skill. Said that last week. I mean, when we talked about it, you know, the press conference the press release talking about the fact that consequences, you know, were going to be part of it. And that we called it. We said that that was going to be the big thing. It wasn't going to be about good play. It was going to be about poor play. And the fact that, you know, you had to go dig your partner out of a bush or a bunker or whatever the case may be.
I also think here, too, there's one person that you take out of this entire mix, and the donations they had is cut in at least half, at least. And it's Tiger Woods. It just proved if you look at the week prior, those are the three, I guess, Matt Wolf to the average person. Like, my wife had no idea who Matt Wolf was when we put it on, but like the other three, she knew exactly who they were. But you put any one of those three guys in that group minus Tiger Woods on Sunday, you still don't get the numbers. You still, like, he moves the needle. It doesn't matter. I can guarantee you, if you actually surveyed all the fans that watched it, I think at least 75% turned it on because he was on it.
Yeah, and those are always the two camps through their, you know, their period of the major parts of their career. It was always, you know, are you a Tiger guy or are you a Phil guy? So I don't think this really works as well without them. I think it's a matter of making your choices of who the other players are and could they fill the shoes of, you know, Brady and Peyton. I mean, Manning was awesome. I mean, not only did he hit some great shots, he had some good lines, you know, talking to the camera a bit. Obviously, they got Eli involved with, you know, some tweets and all sorts of different stuff, whatever. But, you know, do you mix in a Steph Curry? Would he do it? Do you need somebody smack talking? Maybe Kyle Lowry in there. But I don't know if Lowry would draw for the U.S. Do you put Romo in there? Or is he just too serious as a golfer?
Romo, that's a good idea. I think I think at the end of the day, it doesn't matter. It depends on.
Tiger
the
and
golfers.
Phil.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. You could do Tiger and Phil, and it could be you and I, and they're probably getting the same amount of views. As ridiculous as that sounds, like maybe they're losing 5 mil of the whatever it was. Like, okay, sorry, it said 6.8. Okay, let's say they cut it in half, but even with two people that no one knows because it's Tiger and Phil are playing.
Yeah, I mean, the Tiger mystique, you can't replace that. But I mean, obviously, there's a football crowd. There's a fact now that, you know, there are not a lot of live sports going on, like zero. So, you know, people needed something to see. So you don't know, you know, did they tune in because of Peyton and Brady? Yeah, as you said, Tiger's the big element here. You can't really have it without him. And I mean, I'd still like to see a match three if they can do that. Even the things like the cart cams, they had some audio fails and stuff like that. But I think they picked the right things to do. They let the players talk a little bit more. The announcers didn't dive in as much. So we heard that, you know, big discussion of Phil going through his talk about the grain and whatever. But the guys that jumped in, like, you know, obviously JT, he didn't put himself in there when he didn't need to be. And Barkley himself, Barkley, you know, jawed when he needed a jaw and didn't sort of jump in when he didn't need to be there.
No, but I think one thing you touched on there is the need for sports and the want and, you know, the opening, right? There's an opening happening. And I think, you know, golf is coming through that door right now. And there's an opportunity for golf, not only from a playing standpoint, but obviously of, you know, a live TV standpoint. But let's, you know, we've touched, like, the live TV standpoint is obvious, right? Like, it's very clear to say, you know, nothing else is on TV. If this is on, I'm going to watch it. Like, if there was some sort of, like, you know, I joked about if my neighbor played bocce ball with his kids, I'm throwing that on TV, right? Like, it's just like people want to fill that void. Well, let's talk about filling the actual void of an activity. Sure. And this idea that this great article on Golf WRX, you know, of the idea is like, is this an opportunity for golf to open up and become that experience, that safe activity you can do with people? What are your thoughts? Do you think there's a huge opportunity here for golf?
Yeah, for sure. And then the big thing there, and I've always said it about golf, is, you know what, all you have to do first is get people there. So whatever the opportunity is, and in this case, you know, you're looking to say, here's a sport that you can do, a safe activity, family can do it together. You don't have to be super athletic. There's a lot of openings that are there. But the key thing about it long term for the game is just getting people there. So if we can open the door and get them out there for the first time, you know it as well as I, the first time that you take somebody out there, they go, oh, okay, one, this is different than maybe what I thought it was. Two, this is really hard, but somehow it's really fun. And three, I could be really bad at it and still enjoy it. So, yeah, I think it is a huge opening, but I think the golf industry itself has to look at it as not an automatic, it's not a silver bullet that's going to help the game. They're going to have to still work at it. They're going to still have to foster it. They have to maintain that interest and not get the person out for the first time. They get to have to get the people to come back for the second time and the third time and the fourth time.
See, I agree with that on the sense of getting people there. I think the issue that golf comes into, and you know, I might be beating this too hard, is so at the end of the day, what keeps people coming back is an experience. And the problem that golf has, and you know, whether it's on any level, is this stiffy experience that sometimes happens. And that, like, you know, say, you know, I bring a friend that's never played it. I was like, well, do you have a collared shirt? Do you have this?
Right.
Like, you know, like that's a lot of the issues, that there's still that experience. And you need to create an experience. Like when somebody comes in the pro shop, you know, act like they have no idea what they're doing. Act like they don't know where the first tee is. You know, like, give them that experience. And I still think that's where golf has the biggest place to grow. I think that's where business alone has the biggest place to grow. And we can beat that down further. And we're not going to right now. But that's for me is the key. What experience are we providing? And right now, I think, one, the experience you need to provide, regardless of the business that you run, is a safe experience. And safety means many different things than what it used to. Safe experience in the past with golf was like, don't get hit by another golf ball or golf cart. And there's still some courses nowadays where you still can get hit by a golf ball. That's a different side of things. But like, now safe of like, do I feel comfortable walking in that pro shop, paying, getting into this golf cart, knowing it's clean and all that? And then when I'm out there, am I going to have fun? Right. And that's, it's tough. And I think golf courses need to get creative with that.
Yeah. I think the thing that happens for a lot of people is that what they fear is uncertainty. So the thing is that a lot of people don't go to the golf course because they're uncertain how to act and where to go. And as you said, you know, everything has to be guided a little bit more and not assumptions made that they know what's going on. So, you know, whether that's a thinking about having an event like a newbie night, you know, where everything is done. But, you know, I think the big thing of that is that I think operators have to think like that all the time, is pretend the person has never been there before. Well, don't assume anything.
Think about the last golf course you went to, right? Like, think about it right now. Okay. Can you think about where the sign for the first tee is?
Yeah, well, that's the thing, because there was no sign pointing me to the first tee. I only knew where the first tee was because I knew where the first tee was.
Exactly. Now, okay, that's one. Okay, next question. Think about where the sign of the pro shop is.
Right. Yep. Totally. Yeah. Like, it certainly wasn't glowing in neon lights and so obvious that I wouldn't miss it.
No. Or think of, and this is probably the best place to have the neon lights. Think about the sign where the bar is to get a drink.
Yeah.
Right? Like they don't happen. And it's because of this atmosphere in golf, and we're going down a whole effort path. We didn't even think we were going down.
This will be another show.
Yeah, this could be this atmosphere in golf of like, you know, you have to be in the know.
You
got to be part of the club. It's a club. It's a country club atmosphere. Even on these semi-private and public courses, there's still that. And I think that is where we run into a lot of problems. And that's, you know, we talk about an opening. The door is open. Do it right. You had a different, you have a chance right now to do it right. Where, you know, you don't often get a lot of redos in this case. So I think a lot of people will start golfing. I heard of, my wife was saying a couple of people from her work went, probably not the best place, but went to like a, you know, a Canadian Tire to buy clubs.
Sure. Whatever.
Just bought it because it's like, there's a driving range open and I'm stuck in my house. So I'm going to go to the driving range. Right.
Yeah.
So I think there's a very good opportunity right now. And, you know, speaking of equipment and the equipment industry and somebody, you know, going to Canadian Tire, not really helping the actual golf equipment industry right now in a lot of senses.
Well, somebody had to make the clubs.
I guess so. I'm sure Goodyear made a couple good dollars off their driver there that they bought. But, you know, I assume companies are struggling. This is the time of year where, you know, you're seeing all the new irons, all the new woods, all the new shoes, everything coming out. And I haven't heard too much, have you?
Yeah, I mean, just from watching the financial side of things, I mean, dialing into some of the first quarter numbers and things like that, definitely a lot of the manufacturers are hurting. The thing that I'm interested about is how they're going to react to that. And, you know, how are they going to pivot as a result of this? Are we going to see changes in The products that they're offering? Are they going to reassess their pricing strategies? Because we're also looking at an economy right now that is in a harder place than before. So not everybody's all of a sudden going to be in a position where they're going to go, you know what, it's time to buy a $700 driver. So I'm very interested to see how the manufacturers are going to react. Sure, they want to get back some of their losses that they've had. And we're talking, you know, tens of millions of dollars within a lot of the major manufacturers. But how are they going to change? What's their strategy going to be going forward? Maybe it changes because there's, you know, new golfers coming in. Maybe it changes because they see that people are, you know, hanging on to their irons or their woods a little bit longer. So that's an unknown right now of what's going to happen. But we're certainly going to see a lot of speculation about that, a lot of planning regarding that. And I would expect we're not going to see the status quo. We're going to see some changes, what they are and how they react. Who knows? But we should certainly know more about that definitely in the next 6 months or so, probably.
One thing for me that I'll be telling is, and you know, I'm not calling any company out in particular, don't think I am, but like for the companies that say, we only bring out new equipment when we've actually gotten better than the previous one, this is a telltale sign. Are you actually using this time to do that? And I think a lot of companies will, if they're able to, you know, where they exist in the world plays a huge part, right? Like if I'm a designer, I need to be in the shop and I need to be working. And I need to have availability for somebody to actually test these stuff. It's tough. It's not easy for those folks. So we do think about all our friends in that industry, and hopefully we can hear of new stuff coming out soon. Speaking of equipment, Justin Rose and Hanma finally figured out what was going on with their situation, finally made it official that they're no longer in a partnership. I don't know the legality words, but just a little side note that I thought I'd throw out there. But a couple, you know, good news coming out, and then we're going to get to our feature interview this week with returning guest Michael Gligic. I can finally nail his name after three times on the podcast.
It's about time.
hopefully it doesn't go back to those early episodes. The European Tour has announced their kind of restart schedule.
Yeah, they've had some discussions. They haven't formally announced it to the media, but John Huggan is reporting that, you know, letters have gone out to the players earlier in the month in May and talking about what their proposal is. And it looks like their plan is to start with a number of events in the UK where maybe they can control some things a little bit better. They won't say anything on the record for the moment. They're going to do much like a lot of the other tours. They're basically going to, it looks like they're going to blend kind of seasons so that players don't move up and down the rankings too much. Probably not going to see a Q school in the fall, but it looks like they'll probably start with three or four events in the UK, which would mean in England and also places like Celtic Manor in Wales as well. Places that also have big facilities, large hotel complexes where they can hold a lot of the players, keep them controlled, keep them in a little bit of a bubble, which is obviously leads into, you know, our interview with Michael and some of the things we talked to him about on that.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. I think Mike would be a great person to chat with about this. You know, he's a rookie on the PGA Tour. Doesn't have, you know, perfect status. He can't just pick and choose what events he's playing. He's got to be pretty picky. He's, you know, whether he it makes more sense to actually go and play a Korn Ferry Tour event versus a PGA Tour event just so he gets a start and gets back into it. And, you know, I can put words into his mouth, but why don't we just get him in the Zoom and we'll just chat with him about what his schedule looks like and how he's been preparing for the start of the PGA Tour season again.
This episode of Tee Talk is brought to you by TaylorMade and the TP5 and TP5X golf balls. Golfers have already made the switch to the TP5 and TP5X from TaylorMade. Maybe you know some of them. John Rahm, Rory McIlroy, Dustin Johnson, Jason Day, to name just a few. If they can win tournaments with it, think of what you'll be able to do with the best performing ball in golf. TaylorMade's proprietary 5-layer ball construction and speed layer system produces more carry distance off the tee, more control in the wind, and more spin around the greens. TP5, TP5X offers complete tee to green performance without sacrifice. Visit TaylorMadeGolf.ca to learn more about the TP5 and TP5X golf ball and join the movement. All right, we want to welcome back to the podcast one of our frequent guests now, Michael Gligic, PGA Tour rookie, Canadian golfer extraordinaire, who's, you know, spending some time kind of chilling these days. So how are you, Michael?
Good. How you guys doing?
Oh, we're doing okay. We're doing okay. I guess we just want to talk some golf, I guess. What have you been up to? I mean, we talked a little bit before we got on the air here. How often have you been playing? How often are you practicing?
Probably like, well, when all this first happened, I'd say it was, you know, once or twice a week. Now that we're kind of getting into trying to get back into game shape here, we're going, you know, 4 or 5 times a week. I'm sure it'll, you know, pick up a little bit this week as well. But, yeah, there's been some weather in South Florida here. So, you know, Mother Nature's kept us off the course the last 2 days. But
who's a part of your crew these days? You have a group of other PGA Tour players you're playing, and maybe I give a quick plug to the club that you're playing out of.
Yeah, I'm down at the Dye Preserve. It's in Jupiter, and yeah, it's pretty cool. We got like a group text going with, I don't even know, 16 or 20 guys and a couple LPGA girls. And I think there's probably like 7 or 8 guys on the PGA Tour, and yeah, a few Corn Fairies, and then a few, you know, Canada, Latin and China guys. So it's a pretty good bunch, and yeah, it's nice to get some good games.
So what's game like? How are you feeling? I mean, we'll get into prior to this and this being your rookie year and kind of been thrown for a loop here, but how are you feeling? How's the game looking?
Game's pretty good. Yeah. You know, Corey Connors has been, cleaning up lately, but, yeah, I've been, you know, right behind him, but, yeah, game's good. And we're just going to, start to, you know, get back into, you know, tournament weeks and, you know, try and prepare as if we're preparing for tournaments and not just, you know, showing up and trunk slamming it with a few range balls kind of thing. So,
yeah, I mean, what's your routine look like? You said, you know, you're having games and stuff like that, but, you know, what does it start to begin to look like as far as transforming practice sessions? How often you plan to be out there? How formal is it? And do you have like a game plan that you'll sort of start to taper into as you get ready for tournament play?
Yeah, it hasn't really been too formal. You know, the first few weeks of all this, I was kind of, you know, hesitant to even go out to the golf course, and it was pretty much just almost felt like I was sneaking out there, hit a few balls and go play kind of thing. And, you know, now that, you know, golf courses are open, you know, across North America, pretty much, you know, I think our course is doing a great job, you know, limited hitting stalls, and the pros can practice at the back and whatnot. So I've been starting to, you know, do a little bit more practice and whatnot, but I actually just got a tripod, like an iPhone tripod that, you know, I'm going to set up on the green and chipping green and whatnot, and do some short game work, over FaceTime with, you know, my short game guy, Gareth Rafluski. And, then I can take it over to the driving range and, you know, work with Foley. So, that's kind of what it's, you know, become right now, but it's, you know, better than nothing. And, you know, we're just trying to make the most of it.
So how often do you check in with those guys? I mean, you know, Foley's spending a little bit more time on Instagram now that he's finally gotten public on that side of it. But, you know, how often do you check in with them, and what are those conversations like?
Yeah, I check in with, you know, I probably keep like in closer contact with Gareth than Foley. You know, Foley I've obviously known for whatever, 17 years or something. But, you know, I think my swing always kind of stays the same. There's not a whole lot to go over. Short game, I'm always wanting to kind of keep sharp and on top of it. And, you know, I started to use the Whoop that's, you know,
nice.
People use on their wrist there to track, you know, all the fitness and all that, all this, you know, your sleep numbers, fitness, whatnot.
How has your recovery been on that? Are you finding out some things about yourself?
Yeah, it's actually pretty neat. Gareth was the one who got me on that. So, yeah, I've been, you know, spending a lot of time talking to him, and whether it be about golf or the Whoop or whatever, we've, yeah, been talking pretty frequently. So,
yeah, you mentioned to me you were spending a lot of time in the gym. Is that new for you, or is just kind of you got more time? Or are you going, I mean, I can't tell from this angle, are you going Bryson on us? Like, are we going to see you out there, you know, 40 no, pounds heavier, not, or what's going on?
No, not quite Bryson, but I always stay in like decent shape, but I don't really, you know, go that hard. I find it tough when, you know, you're playing 6 weeks in a row to just, you know, go out there, grind, you know, a few hours on the range, putting green, and you go play a practice round, and it's like, I just kind of want to go back and chill and kick the feet up and relax a little bit. And I kind of learned over the years that, you know, rest is almost as equally as important. And, you know, some of the guys, it works for them. But, you know, I had some of my, I kind of tried it for 2 years of my career, and I had two of like my worst years, probably when I was intense with fitness, going back to the hotel. I brought like a huge bag full of, you know, workout gear week to week. And those were like two of my worst years. So I try and, you know, just kind of stick to stretching and like mobility stuff. But, you know, with this huge layoff, you know, just been going pretty hard with like the home workouts and stuff. But I'm sure I'll look like the same guy. I won't be showing up like Bryson.
What do you do though, from a diet standpoint? Obviously it might be a little bit different since you've been home, got a chance to have a few more home cooked meals, not so much, you know, food on the road. Has that been a good thing or a bad thing for you?
It's pretty good. I always, you know, look forward to getting home and having the home cooked meals. It doesn't happen, you know, too often in our lifestyle. So, really enjoying that, but, it is a little weird. We're kind of running out of ideas, and we just got one of those, subscription boxes or whatever, where they, you know, send you all the ingredients and, you kind of put it together. So, we've been playing around with it, but, yeah, I always eat pretty healthy. It doesn't really, change whether it's, you know, at a restaurant or at home. So.
Well, let's go back a little bit. This is obviously your first year on the PGA Tour, and I'm kind of wondering, is once this all went down, did you have a few weeks of almost, you know, and I would say it's fair, almost self-pity, like I made it all this way. I've been grinding on these tours for years and finally here, and now this happens. Like, what was your mindset through that? Because I know I probably wouldn't handle it very well.
You know what? I was all right. You know, I knew that this was, you know, bigger than golf, and everything would kind of take care of itself. I think everyone's put their trust in the PGA Tour, that they would make the right decision. I think my one fear was, you know, that I would kind of lose out on a bunch of my starts. And if they would have just completely shortened the season, you know, everybody's going to be wanting to play when they get back. And if it was just a shortened season, it would, you know, kind of suck to only get, I think I've played 12 events. I'd probably only get a couple more before the playoffs. So maybe 15 event season as a rookie, you know, not really ideal. So I was a little fearful of that, but yeah, I think the PGA Tour made the right decision, just kind of extending everyone, you know, another year on their tour and go from there.
So what does that do for you now? I mean, do you feel a little bit more freed up? Because it's almost like winning, you know, like McKenzie did when he won, you know, at RSM, and then, you know, he's kind of had some extra bonus time. So do you think of it that way, or you just think, okay, you know what, when I go back, I've still got to, you know, hit the gas and try to secure my status for the years beyond that?
I mean, I think it's kind of a little bonus that I just get kind of like a free kick at the can. And we were kind of talking about it, how we can just go out guns blazing and, you know, obviously we're going to try and win, but you know, first goal, I guess, would be to finish in the top 125. Cause if you top 125 this year, that'll carry over to next year. So the worst status I would have is what I had to begin with this year in the Korn Ferry Tour category. So let's try and move up a category, and, you know, getting that 125 will get me in a lot of events that the Korn Ferry Tour category won't get in. So it's nice to just kind of be able to freewheel it the rest of the year and see what we can do.
So where are you at now with that schedule and what you're looking forward to? Where's your starts going to be? And, you know, if you're not going to get starts, are you going to combo in any Korn Ferry Tour events, or how's it looking for you?
Yeah, I'm not going to get into Colonial. That one is just packed. So I'm going to
write a letter for you, man. It might help.
I'm gonna actually go play the first Korn Ferry event at Sawgrass there, and that's just kind of on the way up to Hilton Head. I got an exemption to Hilton Head, and so yeah, I'm gonna go play the Korn Ferry event, then Hilton Head, and then after that's the Travelers, which I'm not too sure if we'll get into or not. I'm saying it's not looking great, so if that's the case, then, you know, I'll just be able to drive up, play those two events, and drive back to Florida here, and get ready hopefully for the Rocket Mortgage and the John Deere after that,
which I think gets into the territory I wanted to go. So you're talking about driving to these first couple events, which I think a lot of people that think guys on the PGA Tour, private jets everywhere. I don't need you to answer this because I know the answer. That's not your lifestyle at this point, probably. So you're going to drive to those first couple events, but then things get a little bit tricky, right? Because the tour's doing this, you know, this private scenario where you and your caddy are able to go, and you know, they got these, you know, private jets basically just for the players. You know, what have you heard about this? And what are your thoughts about that overall, and just the whole scenario of getting you guys around the country?
I think they're doing the best they can. I mean, they're trying to keep everyone that they keep referring to it as the bubble. Everyone that's in the bubble, they're trying to, you know, have them stay in the bubble as much as possible. And, you know, I think they understand not everyone, you know, it's hard to manage, you know, the 450 people in the bubble that they're projecting are, you know, going to be inside the ropes essentially, but you know, the more people they can keep in the bubble for longer, just, you know, the better off they are, and the, you know, less likely that something can happen. But yeah, there's a lot to it, I guess. You know, host hotels and courtesy cars and restaurants and food and airplanes and stuff. So you know, they're trying to keep all the guys out of the airports, and obviously with that being probably the worst, one of the worst places you can go, you know, having a plane chartered for all the guys, I think, was a pretty good idea. And I think they just sent us some information about that. So I think guys are starting to sign up for those, and yeah, I think it's a pretty good option.
Now, that bubble, though, is really just the minimum, right? Just kind of you and your caddy. And does your wife or any family member get to be involved in that bubble?
No family. Pretty much nobody. It's yeah, player, caddy, and I'm not too sure. I think you're allowed a coach, but I'm not too sure how the rest of it's kind of looking. But I don't think anyone's allowed to have their physios or anything like that either. So I think I heard the tour trucks, there might have one or two representatives from each company. And yeah, that's about it. I think you got to make appointments to go into the tour van. I'm sure the first week it's going to just be jam packed with all the guys having, you know, not much, you know, not much access to anything the last few weeks. I know I'm kind of itching to get a few things done with my clubs, so I'm sure it'll be packed. But yeah, everyone's making the most of it, and as long as everyone can kind of keep safe and stay in that bubble, I think it'll be all right.
You know, I was going to make this comment as a joke, but now that I think about it, how many guys do you think are going to be not, they're going to be told that their wife is now their golf coach, and that's who's allowed in the access, right? Like, you know, instead of having the golf coach with them, they're going to be told the wife is going to be allowed to travel with them. I mean, I don't see it being out of the realm of possibility.
Yeah, I don't know. I never actually thought of that. That's a good one.
Well, hopefully your wife doesn't hear this and she's not getting in your ear about that idea.
No, I think she's busy with work anyway, so she's going to stay down and do her thing. But yeah, I know Corey Connor's wife actually was talking about going up to Hilton Head just because she's, you know, going to be bored being in the house down here. She might as well be in a new new house in Hilton Head. At least she's got the beach close by she can just walk to or whatever, but be weird not being able to go watch or anything. Like, I don't know, imagine Corey being, you know, in the final group or coming down 18 with the lead and she's sitting in like the hotel room watching on TV. That'd be kind of weird. But yeah, everyone's just making the most of it, so it'll all work out.
Well, she got a lot of FaceTime when there was a full crowd out there. Now imagine she's the only one walking around. They're going to be panning back to her even more.
Oh, yeah.
But yeah, it's just going to be you and your caddy out there, and you guys have obviously, you know, you're close and been together for a while, but, you know, do you think guys are going to be spending even more time than usual with the caddies, and that relationship being, you know, extremely important during this next stretch?
Yeah, actually, I don't think my regular caddy, Dave's going to be coming to the first couple. So he has type 1 diabetes, and it's, you know, kind of high risk with this all going on. So he's going to, you know, sit the first couple out. But yeah, I'm interested to see how that all works because, you know, they're obviously encouraging the social distancing and whatnot. But, you know, your caddy's going to be all over you. Like, touching your clubs and your bag and your ball, and even
whispering
if they don't do
your
that,
ear like 2 feet away, right? Like,
yeah, they're gonna, you know, there's only so much room on tee blocks. So you're gonna obviously gravitate towards your caddy, and everyone's gonna kind of probably be in little teams of two. I don't know how that's all gonna get perceived. Like, part of me is kind of saying, like, you know, if I'm gonna get it, my caddy's gonna get it, and if he gets it, I'm gonna get it. So let's just be as safe as we possibly can together, and let's go about our business. But you know, I don't know if, you know, the public's gonna see it that way or not, but I don't know. It's gonna be interesting to see. The one thing I was thinking about too is, you know, if I were to win the RBC Heritage, how would that look like on the 18th green? Just kind of, you know, waving to the no fans. I'm technically not allowed to, like, hug my caddy, give my caddy a high five, nothing. It's just kind of, you know, awkward silence. I don't know. It's going to be a strange thing for whoever wins Colonial to, I'm curious to see how that kind of,
I hadn't
out.
Thought about that. That's hilarious.
No, me neither. I mean, yeah, they couldn't even hand you the, you know, the plaid jacket or anything, probably. I don't know how that would work, right?
Maybe the checks will just be really, really big now. So you can, like, stand really far away from it.
Yeah.
So you mentioned earlier about getting communications from the tour. I imagine they've been in touch with you guys more than ever. I mean, what's that been like for you? I mean, is it daily updates? Is it, you know, a couple times a week? I mean, what's the intensity of that between the tour and the players?
I'd say it's probably like weekly updates. We're just kind of getting, you know, a recap of what's been going on in all their meetings with, you know, the player council there and, you know, the pack and whatnot. So, you know, Ryan Armour is, he's on the pack and he plays out at our golf course. So he kind of gives us a little bit of the inside scoop of what's going on, but, you know, we find out officially from the PGA Tour, usually a day after he tells us. So, but yeah, it's pretty straightforward and everything that you'd kind of expect, you know, safety obviously being number one, and, you know, everyone wants sports back. So I think golf's really pushing to, you know, be number one to come back.
Speaking of sports, people can't see you because of the podcast, but you are wearing a Marlins hat. You're, you know, sporting the local team. You grew up as a baseball guy, and the PGA Tour Originals video just came out with you and Natasha, and obviously featured a sequence with you visiting the Marlins. When was that shot, and how cool was that for you to be involved with that, especially since baseball has taken such a big part of your life?
Yeah, it was pretty cool. It was it was probably like a week or two before all this kind of broke out. So I don't know when that even was. I'm kind of losing my mind.
Early March, I guess. Yeah.
Yeah. Early March, maybe end of February, but yeah,
it was a 73 cool. day we weekend.
We went to the Marlins spring training, which is actually like pretty much across the street from where we live down here. And yeah, it was cool. Just kind of watched all the pitchers go through their thing and went and watched batting practice. And then, you know, all the guys egged me on to get in there, and, you know, I think I put on a little show. I think I went like 15 for 15. I didn't miss one, so it was pretty good.
Any dingers?
But no, it was actually howling into the wind like really hard, and none of them even really sniffed hitting it out. It was like pumping into the wind. So, but yeah, it was the first time I was in the batter box for a while. And boy, those pitches looked real fast. Like, you know, it's coming in a pitching machine, and you know it's going to be a strike, but I was still pretty pretty nervous. But yeah, it was all pretty fun though.
You played a couple of different positions growing up, but, you know, one of them was a pitcher. I mean, could you bring the heat? You know, you're a big guy now, but you know, what do you know what you maxed out at?
I don't know, actually. I was, you know, I really wanted to get in there and throw some pitches. I was a little hesitant to, you know, all of a sudden go from not throwing a baseball in years to, you know, throwing it as hard as I can and seeing what reaction I get from the guys. But, yeah, I wasn't really calling the shots that day. It was what the PGA Tour wanted to do. And, you know, they wanted me to get in the batter's box, so I just did that. But, you know, we threw some ground balls and whatnot. And, you know, I still had the grounders. My dad would be proud. He was the coach, and he'd always, you know, give all the players crap and make us do push-ups if we let a ball go under our glove. And I didn't let any go by me. So, it was a good day.
I don't know about you, but that would be my dream, is like just to go in the outfield during batting practice and just let like snag shit, like fly balls and stuff like that. I would pay good money to go do that at like a Jays game or a Marlins game.
Yeah, it was, it'd be pretty fun. I would love to go and do like a full day of like infield batting practice, fly balls, pitching. I think it'd be pretty fun. And, you know, you get a good appreciation for how good those guys really are.
When you grew up, you were a Jays fan, I assume.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was.
Did you get to a lot of games when you were a kid, or was that something that was part of it, or you just played a lot?
I played a lot. I think I've always just kind of gone to like a game or two a year, you know, whenever we're home and, you know, we get some tickets. But, pretty fun. A lot of memories going down to, you know, the Sky Dome or Rogers Center. And, I don't know if, you know, baseball's going to be going on or when it's going to be going on, but hopefully I can get back for a game at some point soon.
So that wasn't the only video you sort of took part in lately. You got to be part of the 50th birthday Zoom call with Mike Weir. How was that for you?
That was pretty cool. You know, I was kind of, you know, just taking it all in a little bit. Like, obviously, you know, there to wish him a happy birthday, but I was also like, holy crap. Like, I had a little moment there where I was like, wow, this is pretty special. Like, I've stood in line elbowing kids at Glen Abbey for many years trying to get his autograph, and I probably got more autographs of him than anyone. And, you know, although I've, you know, became good friends with Mike over the last couple of years, it was just kind of cool to, you know, be involved in, you know, their, you know, for them to think to invite me to, you know, wish him a happy 50th. And then, you know, when Jack got on the line, I was like, holy crap, this is, I, you know, got my phone out, and I was that guy that, you know, was trying not to take a picture of my, trying to not, you know, make it seem like I was taking a picture of my Zoom call, but I was definitely taking a picture of the Zoom call. So
what I'm doing right now.
So it was pretty cool.
That is cool. You're talking about your, sounds like, you know, it's starstruck experience, you know, at some point back in the day with Mike Weir. And we actually, each week we open up the mailbag and usually they ask us questions, but this week we open it up and let people ask you questions. And one of the questions was really around, you know, that first wow moment on the PGA Tour. And the question was, in your time on the PGA Tour so far, is there a certain player with a certain skill, whether it's a certain shot they hit, their short game, something along those lines, that have just made you, you know, have that wow moment?
That's a tough one. I don't know if I know when I saw Tiger on the putting green at Torrey Pines, that was like a wow moment. He didn't even have to like hit a putt or anything. I was just like, wow.
He just had to breathe. You know,
yeah, he just had to breathe and move. And I was like, wow, this is actually Tiger Woods. And we were putting to the same hole. And I was like, okay, I got to make this like 6-footer because I don't want him to think I'm a duster. but no, I don't know. I'd have to think about it for a second. I guess, you know, I played a couple of practice rounds with Abe Anser. His short game and pitching is pretty nasty.
I think a lot of people don't realize too, like once you get out there, and then we talk about this bubble, you really do get in your bubble, right? Yeah, there is the you know, the small talk between, you know, the players and other caddies, but you're very much in a bubble out there for, you know, 4.5 hours. So you can miss those type of things. And, you know, from my experience, when we were in the same group, when Chappell shot 59 at the Greenbrier, and I probably didn't even pick up on it until like 11 or 12 that this was even possible, because you're just in that bubble.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And, you know, that kind of goes for practice rounds too. You're kind of, you know, in your bubble, learning the golf course, hitting a bunch of shots. But, you know, I, you know, made an effort to make sure I kind of watched Abe a little bit, because, you know, I've always known he's had a really good short game. We played together a little bit on the Korn Ferry Tour back in 17. And, you know, he's pretty known for, you know, his chipping and pitching. And I, you know, got to kind of see it again firsthand, and yeah, it's pretty special. But you know, I play with Corey Connors every day, and you know, he leads. I think he leads the PGA Tour in like tee to green shots gained, maybe, or I think that was last year. I don't know. I'm not really looking.
Peppers has the easiest job ever. He hasn't cleaned sand out of a wedge ever, because it's just every green he hits, every fairway, just the easiest job.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, you know, there's me having my caddy like clean the mud off my shorts because I just hit it out of the drink again, and you know, Peppers doesn't touch the rake all year, but
doesn't know what it looks like.
No, yeah. So you know, I see, you know, some of the best ball striking in the world, you know, every day. So the ball striking, you know, doesn't really get me anymore. But you know, Abe's chipping and pitching, I'd say, is the one thing that kind of stood out, I guess.
So when you see
Abe, that question.
Yeah, so when you see Abe do that, is that something you kind of just make note of for yourself, or is that something maybe you talk to Gareth a little bit about and say, hey, you know, he was doing this, you know, why was he doing this? He was getting this result. How can I do that for myself? Or is it just something you digest on your own and sort of just add into your game?
Yeah, I think I might have asked Abe a question or two and about whatever he was doing that current day or that shot that he just hit. And, you know, I think he's maybe posted one or two things on social media that I've kind of tagged Gareth in and had him take a look and asked a few questions about it. So it's more just about better understanding, you know, the wedge, the bounce, how it reacts to the turf, the shot selection. Just, I think over the last year or so, I think that's the biggest thing I probably learned from Gareth is that, you know, I've always had the technique. It's just understanding what shot to hit when, how to use the bounce, how it interacts with the turf. You know, I've always kind of played either, you know, Bermuda or bent grass. Haven't really, you know, traveled that much to, you know, like the West Coast where they get some other types of grass
and stuff like that. Yeah.
So, you know, he came out to one of the events on the West Coast there, and you know, just understanding all that stuff a little bit better has, you know, really helped. So,
yeah, that shot selection. I mean, I remember seeing you guys working late at night at the Canadian Open at Ancaster. And one of the things that looked like you were doing was not working on so much of technique, but looking at choices. So, you know, how does an amateur, you know, kind of learn that a little bit better?
Yeah, I would say it kind of goes with skill level. Like the higher your handicap, I think the less shots you should probably try and have around the green. You know, if you're, you know, an 18 handicap, probably chipping it inside 10 feet's a, you know, a great shot kind of thing. So let's just work on, you know, one or two basic chips, maybe, you know, a high, low, and a medium kind of shot to, you know, try and get in that whatever 10-foot circle, and you got a chance for your par. But, you know, when you get up into the professional level, I think it's, you know, these guys are so good that you can't be, you know, leaving any stone unturned. And, yeah, for me, it's, you know, it's been a little, I wouldn't say tougher, but it's, I think I was more like one dimensional for a while where I just kind of had like one, two, three shots. And then you get on, you know, these PGA Tour golf courses or, you know, even Korn Ferry Tour golf courses where, you know, it's super tight around the greens. And, you know, Greenbrier was a good example. It was pretty tight around those greens there, actually. And, you know, I would just always kind of gravitate to the one shot that I felt most comfortable with, even though it wasn't the best shot for where I was. So trying to just sharpen up all my skills so then, you know, I can play what shot is best in the scenario rather than just gravitate towards what I feel comfortable with, even though it's not the right shot.
Well, you have something for me to think about, because I feel like I either go with that low spinny pitch or the ridiculous flop shot that looks great every once in a while, but often does not work. So I'm going to hit up the chipping green here soon. Glig, we don't want to keep you any longer. We really do appreciate you coming on for your third stint. You know you're welcome anytime on Tee Talk. And we look forward to seeing you out there soon. And good luck. And, you know, this extended rookie season that you know you've worked your whole life for. So we're proud of you. And hopefully we can see you out there not hugging your caddy after the RBC.
I'm sure I'll I'll just take the fine and probably hug him, but if that's the case. But yeah, thanks, guys. Thanks for having me on again. It was fun, as always.
Thank you, Mike, again for coming on the Tee Talk podcast for your third time. We appreciate it as per usual. I liked that at the end. He was talking about practicing different shots there and learning different shots of the around the greens and, you know, not just having one shot. And I joked on the interview saying, like, I got to do that. And I'm dead serious. I really got to figure that out. Try some different things because, you know, as I mentioned off the top, I got a 17-shot difference between my low round this year and my high. And the Flagstaff Open is not that far away. It's coming up in August, August 15th and 16th. If you haven't signed up yet, make sure you go to flagstaffopen.com. Sounds like we might be getting some big names showing up from the amateur world in Canada.
Yeah, we're starting to get a few verbal commitments from different players. I've been talking to the number one order of merit player in Canada, Noah Steele, who we've talked about on this podcast, who's been on this podcast before. So it looks like he's committed to play. He's looking at possibly a couple of his teammates, talking to them about coming down. And then we've been talking to a number of Team Ontario players, all sorts, looking to play this event. I mean, really what it amounts to is players are looking for opportunities. You know, there's all sorts of tournaments that have been canceled, but you know, we are going ahead with this on April 15th, 16th. So, you know what, we've got Golf Ontario ranking points, got a 36 hole tournament, good field, got four flights too. If you're not going to be, you know, wanting to beat your head against those guys, which, I suggest you probably are not, but, certainly we still got some spots open, but, the field is growing and we're getting more and more commitments every day, but, looking to have one of the strongest fields we've ever had in the history of the tournament.
Yeah. One of those reasons the field is going to be so strong as I will be back in the field this year.
Definitely. They all want to come and see you. That is pretty, I think, a ball on the first tee.
Yeah. I think that's pretty much, the reason a lot of people come these days is, you never know what I'm going to do out there. So, you know, the key is if you end up leading after day one, not only do you might have to play with me, you have to be interviewed by me and you after. And, like, you know, that's Peter did it last year. And then after we interviewed Peter after he won. So, you know, a little sidebar, maybe if for all those people out there that said, oh, I could have made it, blah, 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 for this and that. Well, you can play against the number one amateur in Canada at the Flagstaff Open this year and really see if your game ever could have stacked up. Spoilers, it probably can't. But we got a new game this week, Scotty.
We do.
And I think it's an original game. I haven't stolen it from any other, you know, sports television show.
Sure,
ever.
No, not at all.
And we've called it the role play game. If you or somebody else. So it's just a role play game is really how it is. So what we're going to do is we're each going to give one another a person that we have to be and a thought of where our head's at, you know, a topic and what this person would think about if they were setting this up. So Scott, why don't you go first? Who am I and what role am I playing?
All right. You are going to be Keith Pelly, who's the head of the European Tour. And what you're going to be doing is, are you getting together a match, like the match two, with a couple of key Euro pros and their football players, which would be soccer for North American folks? I mean, would that have any interest to you as the head of the European Tour?
So here's the thing. It obviously, you know, I've been a great CEO for the European Tour. I have created this great brand. You know, people love watching the European Tour. We're the fun tour. Here's the problem we have is that the names that are going to bring people to watch my match are way more expensive than the Tom Brady's and the Peyton Mannings of the world. So if we're thinking about this, you know, we're looking at the Messis and the Ronaldos of the world. I don't even know how to properly say these guys' first names. That's how expensive they are. So if I could do it, and yeah, maybe it is for charity, and if I got to convince them it's for charity. Things are tough also in Europe right now. I don't know if you know. I'm the CEO over here. Things are tough in terms of the COVID stuff. But here's the match I'm going to propose these guys, and hopefully they're going to pass off their guarantee money and that'll go to charities. I'm going to get Tommy Fleetwood and Messi versus Lee Westwood and Cristiano Ronaldo. I think that's going to bring out massive numbers. These numbers, if we can get these four together, these numbers are going to be bigger than what you saw on the match two. And I can guarantee you that.
Nice. I think I'd dig into Sky Sports and watch that one for sure. So what do you got for me?
All right, hold on. I've transitioned back.
Oh, sorry. Yes.
Sorry. I'm no longer Keith. You can call me Stefan again. All right, Scott. You are an LPGA caddy. What is going through your mind right now as the tour is planning to restart with caddies as being optional?
First thought, holy crap, am I out of work? I mean, really, I'm probably not happy. Really, I mean, here's the thing. If the PGA Tour is going to go back with caddies, then I don't think the LPGA Tour caddies experience should be any different. I mean, they should be part of the team. They are part of the team. They're integral to what happens out on the golf course. I understand all the health implications, all sorts of different things this way. But you know what? I'm also wondering, are there a bunch of players that are going to look to just like cut costs just to get rid of us? And really, I feel undervalued at this point. Even the fact that it's been suggested that they could go out there and, you know, play without us, I don't know if I feel really valued by the tour.
I think that's a great take as an LPGA caddy yourself. I think, you know, it's going to look bad if there's some players, especially a top player that you know can afford it. That's not bringing, you know, their caddy around. If they're not truly citing that there's fears of COVID and, you know, and some, if just needs one leak, one caddy to leak that this person is just cheap, then it's not going to look good. So it could be a very tough situation. And, you know, we have good friends out there on the LPGA Tour that are caddies and we're thinking of them. So hopefully this doesn't happen. Hopefully, you know, they figure it out and everyone's got a job and we're back to normal soon. So thank you for your take, LPGA Tour Skit. LPGA Tour Caddy Scott. All right. Next role play.
All right. You are now Fred Ridley. You are the chairman of Augusta National. Do you offer to host an LPGA event at some point in line with the initiatives that you guys have started of growing the game, your drive, chip, and putt, your Augusta National Women's Amateur? Mr. Ridley, when are you going to have an LPGA event?
Well, Scott, thank you for having me. Of course, I've always wanted to be on the Tee Talk podcast, and you guys are welcome to come play Augusta National at any time. I think it's fair to say that Augusta National hasn't treated women the greatest in the past, and I think we have a lot long ways to go and allowing them to become equals at our exclusive golf club. So I absolutely am looking at setting up an LPGA event. I would like it to be a major. The women's Masters, as you want to call it, where obviously we have the National Women's Amateur, but I believe women should be able to wear the green jacket just as men should. I understand there's a lot of tradition with the, you know, Augusta National and how long we've gone back to giving men green jackets. Well, I hate to break it to everyone that says, you know, tradition's important, but tradition started at some point. So why not start a new tradition today? And that is what I'm doing as the chairman of Augusta National, announcing that we will be starting the Ladies Masters at Augusta National starting in 2022.
Thank you for taking my question.
You're welcome.
All right, what do you think, absolutely?
I'm back. Sorry. Well, see, my role play, you're putting
do
me
you
in
have
like,
to have, I know, it's like high school acting. I'm not sure that's my deal. So
you're putting me as like actual people. I'm just letting you be vague. So because, you know what? You made me be two very specific people, and I had a... You know, I practice a lot of method acting prior to
coming
on this podcast.
Nice.
So yeah. I wore a green jacket all day and
just to prepare.
Yeah, I spoke in a European accent. I don't know where Keith Kelly's from. so yeah, that's how I prepared for those two.
Very nice.
All right, Scott. Next question. Next role play is for you. So Scott, you are Tiger Woods. Obviously, ooh, COVID is coming. COVID is here. It's tough, but the schedule is coming, and we're opening up the PGA Tour again. So, what is your plan for your schedule the rest of the year, knowing COVID is still a very real threat?
That's a really, really, really tough question. That was terrible.
Are you going to keep with that? Or
no, I'm not. It's not going to happen. I'm not going to impersonate him. I'm thinking Tiger's playing the majors and the majors only, and that's about it. I'm sorry. I'm going to be close to my family. I'm going to practice a little bit at home, but this year I have to stay and just play the majors. I need my rest. I need to take care of my back. You will see me at 3 majors and catch me next year.
All right, Tiger. Thank you for joining us on Tee Talk. We really appreciate it. You know, I almost thought Tiger was there for a second. If you close your eyes and go back to that, you might think we brought him into the Zoom call. That was really good stuff. All right, Scott, what do you got for me?
All right. Let me think. All right, you're a professional caddy. Well, sort of. Aren't you already? Maybe?
Debatable.
Semi? All right. Semi-pro. There you go. You're a semi-pro.
I was. Yeah, I was forced into retirement.
There you go. If you don't get hired, you're now retired.
Yeah, yeah.
All right. So you've got a choice. But you're going to plan to loop at a top club. You're not going to go out on tour. Do you take a gig working at Augusta National where it's not busy and you're working mostly as a caddy for members? Or do you head over to St. Andrews where you're busy most of the year and you get to caddy for the general public all the time?
Well, that's a great question, Scott. And I really want to let you know, I'm doing this job.
I want to hear your Scottish accent, by the way.
I'm doing this job not for the money. Not for the money at all, because if I'm going to be a full-time caddy somewhere, you know, you're probably doing it for the love of the game, depending where you're doing it. So I've been doing a lot of research about this, and there's, you know, Augusta National, you know, you're roughly making around $75,000 US to do it there. Now, that's a good, very good living. Very, very good living. But you're living in the hottest place on earth. You know, you're in the middle of Georgia. So I, as much as Augusta is, you know, elite, and I love it, and they're doing that Masters for the ladies in 2022, as you heard earlier when we had the chairman on, I just don't think it's for me. It's not for my lifestyle. I'm moving over to St. Andrews. I'm living in that beautiful small town. You can find me at the pub every single night, just on the corner there. You can find me eating, you know, pot pies every other night. You can find me doing tours of the RNA's Hall of Fame right there on the side, and I'm just living that quiet life in St. Andrews. I'm gonna be a caddy at the Dunhill Links every couple years, hopefully. Maybe I doubt I'll get it every year because my reputation probably isn't that great on
been hanging out at the pub too much. So,
exactly. Yeah. So that's not going to help my case. But I'm going to St. Andrews. I think the life's for me. You know, you got the beach there. You know, you're at the home of golf. So I'm going to St. Andrews. The money is probably going to be half as much, but hey, I'll make it work.
All right. I like that. I can dig that. I can stand up for that. So who am I next and last?
All right. Last one, Scotty. You are Justin Rose.
Ooh.
And currently you have no sponsor for your golf clubs. So another artisan brand has reached out to you and your people. They want to get you a contract. You know, they're going to match any other brand out there. What are you telling them?
Well, it's just unfortunate that the current situation has happened. I had a lot of hope for my partnership with the certain brand who I won't name because I'm not part of any deal with them anymore. But you know what? Partly it's my fault too. You know, if a brand does come forward to me, I just want to do a lot more testing before I all of a sudden just throw clubs in my bag and expect to go out and play like I have after playing with one brand for a long, long time. So,
were you any good with that one brand though, Justin?
Yeah, I did okay. I got a major out of that, and I might have got pretty close to the top of the world. So, you know what? I don't want to make a mistake again. I'm interested in partnering with other companies, but I'm going to have to tell them my testing process is definitely going to be a lot longer this time. And if I can't produce the results, I'm definitely going to have to play some tournaments and try the equipment out, you know, under the gun, see if it works. If it doesn't, I'm sorry, you know, trial period's over, and I'm just going to have to put in my bag whatever I can to play my best golf.
Thank you, Justin. You know, you were asking to come on this podcast a lot, and we just finally allowed it to happen. I'm sorry it's so short, but thank you for coming on.
Well, I appreciate it. I love listening to Tea Talk when I'm home in Florida and in England, and certainly I'd be happy to come back on anytime.
Thank you, Justin. Well, that's role play. I hope you guys liked it. I had a lot of fun. As you can tell, I'm a method actor in my spare time. And as you can tell, Scott does accents in his spare time.
Barely.
Well, I think we should do this more often. If people want to hear role play, send us a message on Twitter or Instagram. And maybe maybe 1 week we'll open up the mailbag and it's purely role play.
Wow. That could be interesting. But hey, I'm willing. I'm game.
I love it. Well, we still got to hit the mailbag. That's next. We're going to take a quick break. We're going to answer your questions after we get back.
This episode of Tee Talk is brought to you by TaylorMade and the TP5 and TP5X golf balls. Golfers have already made the switch to the TP5 and TP5X from TaylorMade. Maybe you know some of them. John Rahm, Rory McIlroy, Dustin Johnson, Jason Day, to name just a few. If they can win tournaments with it, think of what you'll be able to do with the best performing ball in golf. TaylorMade's proprietary 5-layer ball construction and speed layer system produces more carry distance off the tee, more control in the wind, and more spin around the greens. TP5, TP5X offers complete tee-to-green performance without sacrifice. Visit TaylorMadeGolf.ca to learn more about the TP5 and TP5X golf ball and join the movement. Welcome back. It's mailbag time. Open this up. Filled up really quickly. Got some great questions this week. Please keep them coming in, and let's get it started. And basically, a lot of people obviously watch the match too, so we have some questions that are related. The first one is, who are you bringing to the club as your pro-am guest between Phil or Peyton? Now, it's interesting that they didn't say Tiger or Tom Brady, but it's a choice between Phil or Peyton, but hey, what the heck? We'll go with that.
I'm not going to lie. I definitely read this as Tom and Peyton. But Phil and Peyton's an interesting
it is.
Side note. Wow. Okay. You got me stumped. Now, I'm just going to go back for 1 second. Okay. No, I'm bringing Tom in the mix here.
No. I think this is why they did it, probably, just to make it tougher on us, right?
No, I get it, but I just want to add a side thing. If it was, say, Tom in the mix, I think it depends on who you are and what your club looks like. If you're a single guy and there's a lot of women at your club, bring Tom. You're probably going to get a few stragglers that go to him, and maybe you can get the ricochets, but that's a sidebar. Okay, so Phil and Peyton. I think you got to bring Phil. I really do, just from...
You got to?
I think you
do. Or you should.
I think you have to. Just on the fact that he's a golfer, everyone's going to know who he is. And if you're bringing one of these two guys, it's a flex for sure. But also on the top of it, he's just really good with people. I think he'd be entertaining. He's probably going to do a speech and love it. He's going to be chirping your friends and the other players. If I was doing it, I want Peyton there for me. Just because I'm a Peyton guy. He won me a championship with my Broncos. I think he's hilarious. But for the average golfer, that most of the golfers out there, I think they're gonna bring Phil. But my end.
All right, for me, Peyton as well. You know, when I look at it, you know, golfers are obviously going to love having Phil there. I'm not even taking into account the fact that you're playing with this person, so, you know, they could help you win. But I think, you know, whatever strokes Peyton's getting is probably going to help you a little bit. I just think it really depends on the club that you're at. If it's a bunch of diehard golfers, they might want to have Phil there. But you know what? I think Peyton's more relatable to a lot of people, whether it's SNL skits or, you know, just football in general. I think he can probably be one of the guys more than maybe Phil could be. And I think for that reason, Peyton's my guy for this one.
I've never played a pro am at a club.
Yeah.
In these cases, when you're doing a pro am, is the pro, does he have to give strokes? Like, is he like coming in at like a +7?
Well, I guess it depends on the situation. I mean, yeah. In most cases when you go, I mean, anybody that comes as your guest is usually an amateur, not a pro. So this would be kind of unusual. I mean, most of the pro-ams that I play in, obviously I go as the pro, three amateurs come along, and then, you know, you have whatever format that they're getting their strokes and things like that. Yeah. So I guess if they were coming as, you know, the am, in your pro group, although that might be funny if you got a club pro that's your pro, and then, you know, Phil's going to obviously show him up by a little bit. But I just think it would be fun with Peyton. I think there'd just be another little element to it that maybe you wouldn't have with Phil.
Fair enough.
All right, on to the next one here. Someone says, our range is not open yet. What are the best tips to get your game warmed up on the first few holes? You want me to handle that one?
I think
your experience.
I'm pretty experienced in the trunk slam. I got to say, you know, I got a full-time job here, and I seem to get to the golf course at just past 3 o'clock a lot of days. But a very good dynamic workout. On the first tee if you can. So if you look up one, like, dynamic workout warm-up out there, you're going to find something. I do a lot of...
Are you the push-up sit-up guy on the first tee box? No, you're not that guy, are you?
I'm not Gary Player here. No, just a lot of, you know, leg kicks and you know, both ways, just getting my legs warm. Same with the arms, really getting them loose, a couple practice swings, and, you know, I guess the first swing, just make sure contact is in. I don't really care how far the ball goes. It's just the first hole. But really for me is, like, if it came down to, you know, you have 5 balls or you literally have to do the dynamic warm up, I'm taking that. I think it helps way more for me, at least. And for me, I just got if my groin is tight, that's where it's hard. I just can't turn. And so get a good stretch in that groin. I know that's what a lot of people are thinking about at home is Stefan's groin good to play golf right now?
No, I'm sort of with you a little bit. Definitely got to warm the body up. You know, you got to get that movement. That's always the hardest part. I mean, you'll see that more as you get older and into my age category or whatever, but, you know, just trying to get your body flexible enough to make the moves. I think the biggest thing is just, you know, don't have a lot of high expectations, and it's hard to believe how many amateurs step up on the first tee and, you know, want to hit their longest drive ever off that first tee. I mean, just make contact, make a lot of practice swings. Be very conservative as far as your targets into the greens. Don't be aiming at flags right away. Just get yourself into it. Aim for the middle of the green. You know, work on your speed as far as the putts. Don't be too disappointed if you're not making birdies the first few holes. And then before you know it, you'll be nice and warm.
Love it.
All right. Match sort of angle again here. If you had to choose 2 LPGA Tour players and 2 female pro athletes to play the match 3, who would they be?
I like this. I think it's a cool idea. This could
be fun.
Yeah, no, I agree. Anytime we get these LPGA Tour questions, I have the same person I pick every single time, and it's literally because I think she's one of the most entertaining women in sports, and let alone figures in sports. Angel Yin.
Or podcast guests.
Yeah, she's in the podcast. And that just, like, why don't we just plug every other golf podcast out there? Because, you know.
No, our podcast. Yeah.
She's Angel Yin. She's hilarious. She hits bombs. Yeah. And I'm going to pair her up with Serena Williams. I think Serena's so intense. There's a difference there that would be interesting. And they're going to take on Lexi Thompson and Ronda Rousey. So Lexi is funny. You know, she's outspoken. I think she would actually say some stuff on the golf course, which a lot of people wouldn't. And Ronda Rousey, who knows what will happen? Maybe someone says the wrong thing. Maybe Serena says the wrong thing, and now they're duking it in the middle of the sixth fairway. Like, I would be afraid of Serena too, but I mean, Ronda's, you know, she has her career for a reason. So, and I also doubt Ronda's ever hit a golf ball too. You never know. But I feel like Serena probably is decent. I have no proof for that, but, you know, there are things the tennis swing does that the golf swing, is it a tennis swing? I don't know. But either way, those are my four. I'm moving on.
Sure. You know what? That's a cool thing as far as those 4 athletes right there. I mean, if I'm a golf ball and any 4 of them are taking a swing at me, I'm cringing. I'm pretty scared. Mm-hmm. That's a lot of powerful athletes right there. You know, Lexi is in the mix for me as well. And I like the vein that you're taking, the fact that, you know what, this is about entertainment. And we need strong athletic ability, but we need people that are going to be a little bit more chirpy. They're going to have the same type of mix that we saw for the match too. So I'll take Lexi as well, but I'll match her up with Lindsey Vonn, because I think she can bring the heat too, as far as, you know, attitude and be outgoing and have a personality. And then, you know what, they're going to take on Danielle Kang, major winner, obviously somebody that we know has a personality. She can chirp. you know, great putter as well. And I'm going to pair her with, and this was the hard one for me, I really wanted to pick out a soccer star, because a lot of the women that are playing soccer, some of the best players in the world, especially off Team USA over the years, I mean, they know how to bring the heat. They're tough. They got some things to say. I love it. And I'm going to pair her up with Alex Morgan. And you know what? I think that foursome would be fun to watch. I think the cart cam would be awesome. I think the consequences of good or bad shots will be amazing. And you know what? It'll be just great TV.
I mean, you're going to get some heat for that. You're going soccer star, and on a Canadian podcast, you're not giving Christine Sinclair the love. You're going Alex Morgan. Ooh.
Yeah, well, I'm just thinking of TV ratings in the U.S. because really, I thought about, you know,
you're the CEO of HBO here, and that's all you care about, your TV rating.
Well, it's not HLN in Canada, so you know, if we did this in a Canadian version, hey, maybe we're gonna have to do this for another episode. We'll maybe think about who our Canadians would be that we'd do for this and tackle it that way. How about that?
Sure.
All right. Another one, a little bit of a legacy off the match. Talking about Phil Mickelson, you know, mentioned him a little bit earlier. Someone asked, will Phil Mickelson win another major?
Yeah, I've been adamant about this. I'm saying, yes, Phil Mickelson will win another major. I'll even give you the major. He's going to win another Masters. He will beat Jack at that record of 46. And Jack have the record? Right. Yeah, he does. Yeah. Right? Yeah, he'll beat Jack. He's got the game. He's got the length. He hits the right shot. He's played amazing at Augusta. Who's to say it won't be this year? Like, I truly, truly believe that Phil has another Masters in him. And I think if we actually analyze the swing and the reason behind that, you know, the longer the swing, the longer your career. It's not short. It's not like quick. It's smooth and long. It's the reason Ernie, you know, was smooth up until that 7-putt on one the other couple of years ago. But I just truly believe it. And I'm not a Phil guy in the sense of a fan. I like Phil. I think he's entertaining, but I just, the skill set alone just makes it, I just don't know how he doesn't. I really do believe he will win a Masters at some point here in the next 5 years.
Yeah, you know what? I was big on him, but you know, and I think you're right. I think the Masters is probably his best opportunity, as far as the skill set and applying it to a major championship. I think it's the one that will serve him the best. You know, maybe an Open at St. Andrews. He'd have maybe a chance a little bit there. We need obviously some space for him to drive the golf ball a little bit sideways, but, you know, going back and looking at his Masters record since 2015, he tied for second there. But frankly, he has not played well since then. He's been T58, T22, T36, and T18 since then. Hasn't exactly lit it up. Only had two rounds in the 60s since that point. So unfortunately for me, I'm out as far as Phil Mickelson and another.
Maybe he's like Fred. Maybe he's like Freddie Couples, where it's just like he's just there every year, but he's not getting past it. I want that. I think Phil, it would be a good end to the career. Everyone wants to see Phil win that U.S. Open, but at this point, I think that's a pipe dream.
Yeah, I mean, you know what? It would be cool if obviously he could do it at Wingfoot, where he had his disaster previously, but I really don't think, you know, Phil Mickelson, you know, who's going to be 50 as he plays that tournament. I don't think Phil Mickelson, based on what we saw even at the Medalist, I don't think that game matches up to Wingfoot. You know, Medalist is 30, 40, 50 yard wide fairways. Wingfoot's certainly not going to be set up that way this fall, so I don't give him a lot of hope there. Hey, it'd be a cool story. I'd love it. I mean, certainly I would, but if I'm a betting man, I'm not putting my money on Phil Mickelson to hoist the U.S. Open trophy or to hoist another trophy at a major championship.
Fair enough.
All right, last one here. How far will you go and how long? How far will you go and how long before you jump on a plane again for a golf trip? So I guess they're just basically asking us, you know, where would you go as far as distance wise currently? And at what point, you know, will you actually consider jumping on a plane again to take a golf trip?
That is
knowing that we're avid players, right?
Yeah, I think just jumping on a plane again, I can't even get my head around that idea.
Like, yeah.
You know, hopping in a tube where there's nowhere to go from people, and I know we're changing. So for me, just to get on an airplane again, and maybe I'm crazy, maybe people are like, you know, you don't like, you're being overly cautious. I don't see myself hopping on a plane again until there's an actual
vaccine
out there, yeah, or there's an actual cure and it's safe. And I know I can, you know, my health insurance you know, covering it. I think that's another thing. Like, I don't know about your health insurance. I don't think I could go to the States right now and know that I'll be covered from those things. It just, you know, and that's the closest place I would go. Right. So I think once that happens, I'll go back, I'll live life normal as life can be, or whatever the new normal is. In terms of in Canada, I'm not against, you know, if we are able to do this, you know, going out to say Nova Scotia and going to, you know, wow, I'm drawing a blank here.
Like a PEI or New Brunswick.
Yeah,
or
going to PEI, Nova Scotia, New Brunswick, wherever, right? Going on a trip. I think the hard part with that, though, is, you know, for me at least, like, my wife likes to golf, but we're not going on a golf trip together. Right. She would, like, so, and like, right now we couldn't, right? If you and I literally can't get in a car together, according to the rules of our province we're living in, of what's safe.
That's so, why, like, we've lived on Zoom for 2.5 months, right?
Exactly. So, like, again, it's so hard to say. This could be tomorrow. Tomorrow they could say, like, hey, we found a cure. We have a vaccine.
Sure.
You know, go to Cabot. Do whatever you want to do, right? Like, but until that's happening, I'm going to be cautious and be happy with the golf courses near me and, you know, the friends near me. And maybe we'll get back to trips. Maybe we won't for a few years. And, you know, it's hard to say. So for whoever asked that question, I'm sorry I can't give you a great answer, but hopefully soon.
Yeah, I think this answer, you know, trying to think about it requires a crystal ball, which obviously we don't have. Otherwise, we'd be very rich from betting on golf. But, you know, not that we would do that. But I think you're right. Yeah, same thing from here. You know, jumping on a plane, who knows? I mean, that's a gamble at this point. I've got a couple of trips that were planned for this year that, you know, are on the not happening as of now, certainly, and I don't plan to have that happening soon. Certainly, I want to see the travel industry kind of rebound, but I think we're going to see a lot more domestic, local, regional stuff happening. We're not going to see a lot of international stuff for quite some time. So for me right now, closer to home, the better. You know, if it becomes safe and it's reasonable or whatever, certainly I'll circulate around the province and maybe do something that way. But, you know, I have to consider the fact that, you know, how respectful is that of the communities where I'm going? How respectful is that for my family and other people back home? And really, in the end, you know what, we all have a lot of great golf courses near where we live. Maybe it's the right time just to wear those ones out.
Yeah. And here's the thing. And we haven't talked much about it in a negative way today. And I think we've had a, you know, very positive, fun podcast up to this point, but I'm still not even sure that this is going to continue of having golf courses open for a while. Like, you know, the cases where we live right now, sadly, continue to go up. And I'm seeing people still not follow the rules and regulations, whether it's on a golf course or, you know, we're at Trinity Bellwoods in Toronto. You see hundreds of people in a park together and you're like, what are you doing? You're ruining it for the rest of us. Like, there was a guy in front of me on the golf course the other day that took the flag stick out on the first two holes. And I had to yell at him to leave it in. Yeah. Right. And I think this is the, you know, the reminder, like, it's okay to be cautious for one thing for other people and stop, you know, who cares about your 4-foot putt on a golf course? Cause guess what? Who cares if the flag's in there? And the one time I hit the flag and it didn't go in, who cares? Cause the next option is the only hole that you're going to putt in without a flag stick is the one on your practice green in the basement. I can guarantee you that's way less fun. Yeah. So just listen. Like, just, it's not that hard. Just listen.
Yeah, mistakes are going to happen. I understand that. You know, people are obviously going to be, you know, walking and all of a sudden they get too close to each other or whatever, but I think they just have to be wary. And I mean, I tweeted about that on the weekend that, you know, if a golf course has particular rules in place and they're saying, hey, you know what, leave the property right away, just respect it. And I mean, that's the thing. If we want to be able to continue doing what we want to do, which is obviously for a lot of us is to play the game, you know, just pay attention more to the rules. Otherwise, as you said, we're going to be back home having putts in our basements again. And certainly, you know, we can all contribute to that. You know, nobody's exempt from that. And you just, if you do it and you follow it, everybody's going to be that much safer and we're going to be in a much better place.
I love it. All right, Scott, you know, my tip of the week clearly was just follow the rules, but let's go to the tip of the week on somebody's golf game. What do you have for them to improve their golf game this week?
Yeah, I'm back on the lesson tee now. And one of the things that I see for a lot of people is that, you know, it's something that happens a lot of the time when they're starting to work on their game is their patience levels. And, you know, golf is a difficult game. It's really hard. I mean, we talk about tour players and we talk to tour players all the time. And obviously it takes them years and years to be proficient at a world-class level. But even to be proficient at a decent level, a good amateur level, it takes a lot of dedication to change and get better. And change takes time. So small things can make a difference, and altering how you perform certain movements in your golf swing, it's not easy. So basically you're reprogramming your central nervous system. You're changing how your brain sends, you know, signals to your muscles. So the tip here is, as a player, you have a responsibility. The coach can show you what to do, why you're doing it, but, you know, ultimately you have to change and you have to be willing to make that change, which means you got to put in work. And so what I'm basically saying for people is that be patient. You know, there might be small things that you're trying to do, but it doesn't mean you have to go and get endless instruction. That's not what I'm saying. You have to go and, you know, take a lesson every day. It might be some small things that you need to work on, but you have to be dedicated to achieving that, which means you have to put in the work. It's not up to the instructor to do that. So be patient. Put in the actual work. Don't just say you're doing it. You know, do the drills, follow the prescription of what your coach is trying to get you to do. And you know what? Eventually it'll happen, because if you put in that effort, it'll pay off. But if you don't put in the effort, you're never going to get anywhere, and you're not going to have anybody to blame but yourself.
Just look at Michael Glegak. Still putting in the effort on the short game, sending videos, trying to learn new shots, right? Like, it never stops. So it's a good tip. I didn't listen this winter. I was supposed to work on that grip and loosening my grip, and I can't do it. I think I'm another year where I'm like, I'll just fight through it for another year and just do my best. And I don't know. It's not helping.
There's still time. There's still time. The season's still young.
That's true. All right, folks. Well, that's it. Thank you again to Michael Glegak for coming on. Make sure you sign up for the Flagstick Open by going to flagstickopen.com. It's August 15th and 16th at Equinel Golf Club in Kempville, Ontario. Big field, great field. You know, we talked about it. We got myself in the field. Like, that's huge enough. And if that's not enough for you, the number one amateur in Canada said he's coming. So, like, that's pretty sweet, too. So, not a big deal. But that's it for this week. Everyone follow the rules out there on your golf course. Don't break the rules. You know, we don't get a mulligan at this one. We want to be able to play all year. So, please just follow the rules. It's not that hard. But also what we need you to do is subscribe to the podcast, rate us five stars only, and leave us some comments and reach out to us on Instagram and Twitter. Let us know if you have some role play you want us to play next week, or some mailbag questions, or just you want to chat and give us some feedback on the episode. We always appreciate it. So thank you everyone for listening. We will see you next week. Some ocean, and a day like today, my boat's lost in the ocean.